This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Christopher Arthur Canty joins us right now.
Where'd Arthur come from?
I just made it up.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, that's not even my middle initial, it's an L.
What is your middle name?
My middle name is Lee. It's my mom's maiden name. So that's a little fun fact for all the listeners at home that didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. So my grandmother's maiden name is my middle name, and it's O'Hara. And thus it makes my initials rather unfortunate. But let's move on. Chris, first of all, let's get some Yankee talk. You being the massive Yankee fan you are, Lindor or LeMahieu? You can have one, but not both. Who do you want?
Well, I mean, if you're going to trade for Lindor, that's going to come with a massive contract extension. And I'm just not sure the Yankees and Hal Steinbrenner have the appetite to go there. You know what I mean? Because you already have this huge contract with Giancarlo Stanton that's not going anywhere. I mean, at some point, you're going to have to make a decision on what you're going to do with Aaron Judge. And you got to think, if you were to make that move for Francisco Lindor, that would be Brian Cashman definitively saying, we're probably not going to make that financial commitment to Aaron Judge in the next couple of seasons. So I don't know if that's necessarily the direction that you go. I heard you floating out the possibility of a reunion with Didi Gregorius. And I got to tell you, I like that on multiple fronts. First of all, you have an opportunity to move Gleyber Torres from shortstop back to second base. And he feels like a lot less of a defensive liability at that position. And you're bringing somebody that's a good fielder, but somebody that's also going to be a steady hand in the locker room in terms of your leadership. And I feel like this Yankees clubhouse could use a lot more of that. So I think you go that direction, and then you try to assess how you need to address your pitching staff. Because that's got to be the next area of concern.
Yeah, not to mention a left-handed bat. Like, that would kill the Yankees, right? And, you know, if you're bringing back LeMahieu, and you have LeMahieu and Didi together, I mean, that's some pretty damn good leadership there. And it's versatility. It's a lot of different things. Lindor, to me, is just that, Chris. I mean, we can go chapter and verse through all of the contracts, the massive ones that have been handed out around baseball. And, I mean, you just saw Clayton Kershaw's finally pay off into a championship. And I know that contracts get based more on production of the player and all other sorts of mitigating factors, but here it's about championships. So if you're going to hand $300 million to Lindor, or let's say $80 million over 4 years to LeMahieu, based on what we've seen the last 2 years, it's not close. It's not close.
No, I mean, listen, Lindor is a phenomenal player. I mean, he's 27 years old. He's a four-time All-Star. He's going to hit around 280, give you 80-plus RBIs, 30-plus home runs, and he's got a platinum glove. So I don't know too many teams around baseball that wouldn't want a shortstop with that type of credentials and production. But it's just a matter of making it fit. And I don't know that this fits the long-term plan of what the Yankees want to do, because you hear them constantly talking about wanting to stay below the salary tax threshold, the luxury tax threshold, and you know, adding a contract like Lindor and then going about addressing the other needs for the team for the upcoming season. I don't know how that's a possibility.
Chris Canty joining us, as he does every Monday with Bart and Han, or every Friday, rather, at Bart and Han. What the hell am I thinking? It's Monday.
honestly, it's 2020. Everything is upside down, man.
Yeah,
it's been
kidding.
A crazy week.
There's only going to be so much longer we can blame it on that, too. But
listen, I'm just hoping that 2021 is a lot better than this one. It's a low bar to clear, but I'm just saying.
It better be.
It better be.
I tell you, when I move to Costa Rica, it's going to be phenomenal for that matter. Chris, you know, pitching-wise, do you want Trevor Bauer?
Who wouldn't want Trevor Bauer? I mean, he's got swing and miss stuff. The guy's talking about he wants to pitch every fourth day, not every fifth day. He wants more work. I mean, he was dominant this season for the Reds. Who couldn't use a guy like Trevor Bauer at the top of your rotation? And then you consider where the Yankees are at. I mean, James Paxton's going to be gone. We'll see what happens with Tanaka in free agency. And we don't know, you know, exactly how or when Severino was going to get back in 2021. So, I mean, just to have somebody to give you that 1-2 punch with Gerrit Cole, I think that would be huge. But that's also going to come along with a significant price tag. And again, you know, it depends on, you know, how Brian Cashman prioritizes his needs on this team going into next season. But of course you want Trevor Bauer. Of course you want.
My only thought about Bauer is he a Yankee? You know, is he going to be a, you know, if things are not going right and he's coming off of this career year, is he going to be a pain in the ass?
Well, I mean, listen, I understand where you're coming from with that, but it's about competing for championships. You just said that 5 minutes ago. It's about championships, and Trevor Bauer would help you compete for a championship. Now, you wonder about the relationship between him and Gerrit Cole and how that would potentially work out, but, I mean, listen, the guy is filthy. So, I mean, being able to have that dude along with Gerrit Cole, I mean, you feel a lot better about the rest of the guys in the rotation when you got those guys carrying the water. So, I personally, as a Yankees fan, I'm tired of not being able to get past the ALDS or the ALCS and into the World Series. You're talking about this franchise going a decade without being in the World Series. That hadn't happened since, like, the 1920s. So, I mean, at some point, we got to break through, and a guy like Trevor Bauer on your pitching staff will go a long ways to helping you do that.
The voice is that of the strikingly handsome Chris Canty. And I mean that. You are a handsome man. I mean, come on.
We're holding it down for the 300-pounders, Carlin. Me and you, buddy.
So no, it ain't me and you. It's you. if nothing, I'm a realist. Chris, the Giants are exceptionally frustrating to watch these days. And the other night was the first time that it felt unacceptable to me in a way that Daniel Jones lost the game for the Giants. And I can, you know, there were a few other times where you could make the case that that happened. But from a development standpoint, that was a game that Daniel Jones could not let get away. And I'm wondering where you're coming down right now on Jones. I know the turnovers. I've heard you talk about the turnovers in 36 and 21 games, but is time running out right now?
Well, listen, it's this is going to be a big game for Daniel Jones this Sunday. Now, fortunately for him, he's had success against the Washington football team, the only NFC East opponent that he's actually beaten. But, I mean, it's starting to get to the point in the season where you're like, okay, Daniel Jones, this is your 22nd start. At some point, you got to stop turning the football over at the rate that you have. You've got a streak of 9 consecutive games that you've done that. And then going back to the beginning of last year, he's got 12 multi-turnover games. So it's getting to the point now where you're pointing to games and you're saying the turnovers are what's causing the Giants to lose. I mean, Bruce Arians said it after the Monday night game with the Buccaneers rolling. He said the kid was trying to do too much without those turnovers. You're probably talking about the Giants winning that game. So, I mean, that's the opposing coach saying because of your mistakes, Daniel Jones, your team lost the game. And so you start to look at it and say, is this something that can be corrected? He had some turnover troubles at Duke. We know that he was well coached down there with David Cutcliffe. So it's not a matter of, you know, does he not know what he's doing? It's just a matter of, can he help himself? Like the turnovers that he had in the second half, especially the one where he was in the grasp of Shaq Barrett. I think he threw it up for grabs and it was Sean Murphy Bunting that came down with it. Like that's a horrific play. Like you have to know to take the sack under those circumstances. Know when to hold him, know when to fold him. Like it made no sense for him to throw that football. And both of the turnovers that he had in the second half of that Monday night game came when the Giants had a lead. So it doesn't make sense to me some of the plays that he tries to force given the circumstances that the team is in. But that being said, this game on Sunday is gonna be a huge ball game because if the Giants don't pull this one off, you're gonna have a hard time finding a win in the rest of their schedule.
And you know, from being in the league, there are times where guys on the team are gonna start looking at the quarterback when this is happening, like, what are we doing here, bro? And I'm wondering if that time has already come.
I'm sure that guys in a quiet moment to themselves are thinking, listen, this guy's got to give us a chance, especially the guys on the defensive side of the ball. Carlin, yeah. We got to admit, his defense is a lot better than we thought it would be coming into this season based on the personnel.
Absolutely.
And some of the decisions that Dave Gettleman made this offseason in free agency went a long ways to helping it. Blake Martinez signing, Kyler Fackrell signing, and of course James Bradbury, who's having a career year. And you can make an argument having one of the best years of any corner in the National Football League. But the defense has given the Giants a chance to be in games. Every game that they play, save one, the 49ers in week 3, has been a fourth quarter game. And so you start talking about margin for error. Daniel Jones is hurting his team because he's turning the football over. This is not an immensely talented roster. So you know that they're going to have to get by on effort by scheme and play calling, which both coordinators are doing very well. But it comes down to your quarterback not making those mistakes that cause you to lose games. And unfortunately, Daniel Jones hasn't been able to limit that. Now, I will say this. Daniel Jones gives them the best chance to win games at the quarterback position. I'm in no hurry to see Colt McCoy. The guys in the locker room,
We can't see Colt McCoy. What good does that do?
I'm just saying. People are saying it. And I'm just trying to quash that a little bit because, listen, guys in the locker room, even though they're frustrated with Daniel Jones, they know that Colt McCoy is not a better option than Daniel Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no question. Chris, why would you even consider playing Sam Darnold on Monday night?
I don't know. I have no idea. But I guess that makes perfect sense for the Jets.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you know, the thing that you think that they shouldn't do or they can't do, they end up doing. Going all the way back to them hiring Adam Gase right after he got fired by the Miami Dolphins. Like, it's a team that you play twice a year, and that program steadily declined each year that he was the head coach. Yet Chris Johnson saw something where he was like, you know what, I got to have that guy as my head coach, even though nobody else around the NFL was going to hire him. So them playing Sam Darnold, when clearly he's got something going on with his shoulder, it makes perfect sense because we've already devalued the kid to the point where he was the third overall pick 3 years ago and we're already looking to cut bait for him. Why not devalue him some more so when he gets to the offseason and there's, you know, we're talking about moving the kid because we've got the number one overall pick. We're going to take Trevor Lawrence. You're getting next to nothing for him. Why don't we do that? Because that makes sense.
I just hate it all around. And here's what I don't understand. Draw this line for me, okay? Play this out. Where is the line between when the player says he wants to play and somebody steps in and makes that decision for him in the NFL? We know where it is in college. Where is it in the NFL?
Well, I think you have to the medical staff and the general manager and the head coach have to be on the same page in terms of the risk that comes along with the player that's hurt going into a game. And under these circumstances, to me, the risk is not worth the reward. I mean, what is the reward for having Sam Darnold go out there and play on Monday night against the Patriots? What is the reward? That's the part I don't understand. Right now, you're 0-8. It's all about evaluating the young talent. But if you've got a young talent that's banged up, and we're talking about a quarterback potentially dealing with a separated shoulder, why would you want to put him in harm's way? Especially coming off of that game last year when he played against the Patriots and the kid, Bill Belichick had him seeing ghosts. Why would you want to put him in that game? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like at this situation with Sam Darnold and this shoulder injury, I just feel like what's in Sam's best interest and what's in the organization's best interest is actually aligned. Because if you're Joe Douglas, you don't want to win any games. Why would you want to win games?
You wouldn't.
At this point, you just want to play out the string with the season and have the number one overall pick. Now, you want the team to be more competitive because you'd like to evaluate some of the young players that you have on this roster. But, I mean, you signed a capable backup in Joe Flacco just in case Sam Darnold got nicked up this year because we've seen him miss games in the two seasons prior due to various ailments. What I don't understand is what's wrong with Joe Flacco going out there and playing quarterback on Monday night, especially if Sam's right shoulder, the most valuable asset the organization has right now, why would you jeopardize that? That doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense to me either. I floated this week, conspiracy theory, to keep Trevor Lawrence away from the New York Jets in one of these two games down the stretch of the season. Could you see Belichick, you know, under disguise, taking a dive?
No.
No?
No,
just because. I mean, he doesn't look like somebody that's going to retire anytime soon.
No, he doesn't. And I'm sure he probably wouldn't like to have a talent like Trevor Lawrence in the division, but the Jets have to develop said talent. I mean, we're talking about Trevor Lawrence now. I mean, there were some similar conversations, not exactly the same, but similar conversations 4 years ago about Sam Darnold. And the Jets actually got him, and they've done everything that they can to ruin the kid. So, I mean, you know, I don't think Bill Belichick is really – you know, holding his breath about the Jets and worried about them getting the number one overall pick because they've proven that they can't develop the young talent that they do draft.
Right. So he just counts on them screwing up themselves.
So I don't think he's worried about it. But the one
thing thing is their incompetence on it.
They're incompetent. And so like I said, this Jets team, I don't have any high expectations for them on Monday night. I think the line is 7.5, and I think the Patriots will cover that easily.
Yeah, I'm still, like, just the diabolical nature of him. I don't know. I'm thinking about...
Well, nobody can figure him out, right? That's the thing. So you're always trying to guess, what is he thinking?
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. I am a non-athlete. I know you wouldn't know that to look at me, but I am a non-athlete.
You're a sneaky athlete.
Well, I stole 10 bases in high school. Never got thrown out once. That's true.
There's a lot of muscle laying dormant.
Yes.
Under your exoskeleton.
Exactly. It's like when, you know, the volcano erupts, you don't want to be around because it's going to be violent. But having said that.
No, you know what's going to be violent? This Rutgers game this weekend.
That's
That'll
why
be
you
got to
go there?
That'll be
violent. Oh, wow.
That's funny.
Oh, wow. 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 I mean, for Pete's sake, we've had, got a great win
For Shiano's sake. Ryan Day, take it easy.
Are you kidding me? Think about what you're saying.
Well, I have this question. This has happened to me twice in the last 2 weeks. Have you ever gone to bed and you're fine and you wake up with a pulled hamstring?
No.
That has happened to me twice in the last 2 weeks. How alarming would that be on a scale of 1 to 10?
That's concerning. How did you do that?
Certainly nothing that you would consider worth it.
Yeah, I mean, to pull a hamstring, you got to be moving quickly, and I don't.
Nope, that wasn't happening.
That's not you.
Okay. No, it's not. Again, I am. I don't like to use the word spry because it implies that I'm older. But I am a cat-like in some situations, but it can't be when I'm sleeping, and I don't know how this has happened. I legitimately have pulled a hamstring twice while sleeping the last 2 weeks. I have no idea what to do about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I need a full-time training.
I can't help you with that one.
Yeah.
I can't help you with that one. Carlin, we got to get to the bottom of something, though, man.
What?
So, you know, I do this spot with Bart and Allen every single Friday on their show. Most of the time we do it at the top of the noon hour, sometimes at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've been floating it out there the last couple of weeks that Bart Scott still has yet to pay up on the bet about my L.A. Lakers getting to the NBA Finals because he felt like, for whatever reason, the Clippers are going to knock him off and win the championship. I said, no way, not with LeBron and AD. Mm-hmm. So let the season play out. Of course, the Lakers win the chip. You know,
LeBron James.
Yeah, exactly. Since then, hadn't heard anything from Bart about paying back the bet. And then I brought it up on DCR again this week. I actually talked about it yesterday. And lo and behold, no Bart Scott today on the show.
He's ducking.
How about that? Isn't that ironic?
He's ducking.
I got bubbles on my damn screen.
Yeah, he's avoiding me like he owes me child support.
When you set me up for the butt.
No, I didn't set him up. You took the bait. I don't know what he was thinking.
What were the stakes for the wager?
$5,000 to the charity of the winner's choice.
So this didn't is you guys bet like a car a couple of years ago?
We did bet a Bentley, the Bentley bet. Now, I actually bought him out from that bet and donated money to his foundation, but I paid off the bet.
Right.
I paid off the bet, right? So
that
now that the shoe is on the other foot, I'm just saying Bart Scott can't get the money to the kids for the Chris Caney Foundation. I don't understand that. Bart's got piles of money over there.
Oh, absolutely.
Piles of money. I don't understand why he wouldn't donate to the kids. It's a tax write-off for him.
I saw Bart in 2 days in a row before I knew him. One day he was on that 30 for 30 broke, you know, and talking about all the guys and about how you had to save your money. And the next day he was on the TV show Tanked, where they're putting in the outside fish tank at his house. And there's like barbecuing around it. There's sharks in there. There's
the sea moss.
There's a Mako in there. I don't know, man. And if
don't even talk about the garage over there. Don't talk about Bart Scott's garage and what he's got in that thing. Whew.
I have never made it to the house.
All the sunlight.
But I have heard. And I find that all You know what? It's outrageous. It's egregious. It's preposterous. And, you know, all of a sudden, oh, today, Mr. Big Man is doing something else, you know? Exactly. Can't show up. That's garbage.
He's doing a national radio show that's simulcast on television, but, you know, he's not going to talk to me about trying to get the Chris Canning Foundation all money.
There were times where I worked with him before where, you know, hey, I got to put in a couple of bucks for this. I'm not going to lie. Chasing him a little bit more than I thought.
He's a little tight with the wallet?
And I wouldn't say tight. But I would say, you know, judicious.
Judicious. Got it.
Christopher, thank you, brother.
My man, thanks for having me on.
Right now, it is time for some audio files.
The audio file.
Let's do it. First up, let's hear from Daniel Jones about clearing the air with Golden Tate.
We communicated, we talked, but you know that's between me and him, and like I said, I have a ton of respect for him.
Wow, that was quick. There wasn't much more to say. In other words, the air's not really clear, and I don't think Golden Tate really gives a damn about what Daniel Jones thinks at this point. He probably still looks at him as like, you know, you're just a second-year player. Who cares? Throw me the damn ball. Meanwhile, Tate is still in the doghouse, apparently was back at practice yesterday and was working with the practice squad. So, you know, maybe he's not playing this week. I could absolutely see that situation playing out that way. Mekhi Becton, who I just love. How does he feel about winning versus losing?
I hate losing more than I like winning, but I'm an offensive lineman. I got to show up every day, so it don't matter what the scoreboard says. I got to do my 111 no matter what. So that's just my mindset. I'm trying to keep my head down, tunnel vision, and keep blocking men in front of me.
See, here's what I love about that. The guys who are true winners are ones that truly do hate losing more than they enjoy winning. And that, in a lot of ways, it's kind of sad, right? But it strikes me that those kind of guys are the ones that are always successful. Belichick is like that. Nick Saban is like that. Nobody hates losing. And let me rephrase this. Nobody loves winning more than hating losing and develops into a winner. Like, you really have to, you're going to be more motivated by the ugly feelings that come from losing in a constructive way than I think you're going to be motivated by the great feelings that come from winning. I don't know if anything I just said made any sense. That's inconsequential. I'm only filling in. Tom Brady, up next.
Well, I have a lot of relationships with a lot of teammates. So, you know, I wish everybody the best all the time. I don't ever wish, you know, for anyone to not perform at their best and so forth. I certainly wish our team to play the best. Maybe the only team I don't root for is the team we're playing on that particular Sunday. So other than that, you know, it is about us being the best we could be. It's working hard every day to put ourselves in a great position to be successful.
Yeah, he's talking about the Patriots there. Come on. Brady is absolutely loving the fact that the Patriots are 2-5, that Cam Newton's coughing up the football on a final drive, that they can't get out of their own way, and it's a lost season. Let's call it what it is. Patriots are done. They're absolutely done. They're cooked for this year. It's over. And with that in mind, that's kind of where my Belichick conspiracy theory comes from when it relates to the Jets. If your season is not really taken all that seriously by the head coach, and I get the impression that Belichick really doesn't consider this that much of a real season. If that's the case, and you have the ability to keep a player like Trevor Lawrence away from the Jets, I would do it. I would take a dive. That's more constructive to my organization for the future than anything else. And you know, you can look at it and say, well, the Jets will find a way to screw it up. At some point, isn't the right guy going to show up in that organization and get it right? And if you're going to couple him with Trevor Lawrence, yeah. I don't know that I would consistently continue to rely on the Jets' ability to screw something up. Finally, Brian Windhorst, the latest on the NBA season on SportsCenter?
Well, it's kind of good news and bad news. So the players did agree to the schedule, which is Martin Luther King Day is out and Christmas week, December 22nd, has been agreed to. However, in talking to people who are on the call tonight, the players have not agreed to the financial terms, which is how much money they're going to have withheld from their paychecks to cover the shortfall from the lack of fans. And so that's a significant hurdle to still get covered. Now, we'll see how the owners react to this. It's still very fresh. The league, frankly, has no motive to move at all on the financials, which is around 18% of their paycheck over 2 years. So we'll see. I'm optimistic it's going to get done, but we assumed 12 hours ago this would be a rubber stamp, done, let's move on, and we only kind of got sort of half of that, so stay tuned.
Yeah, exactly, and I understand that. Now, I love the fact that they're going to start the season December 22nd, and frankly, I think that the NBA really needs to rethink their calendar overall. Because starting the season in late December and going through the end of August, I think for them is a much better calendar than going from October all the way through to June and July. Because if you do that, you're talking more about having to go up against the NFL. And this would minimize that, some playoffs here and there. And if you think that they would be remotely worried about going up against baseball, you'd be nuts. Now, as far as the money's concerned, yeah, this is going to get dicey, but I would have to think the players, at the level of money that they make, you know, 18% over 2 years, that number's not going to get moved off too much, and they're going to have to deal with that. Because otherwise, you don't need to be sitting and waiting and trying to, you know, get that paycheck when the perfect chance to get it would be there already. And it just at a minimal reduce, not minimal, but a salary reduction that they could deal with. That's Audio Files for Bart and Hahn on this Friday, February the 6th. Carlin in for Bart and Hahn, 800-919-3776. Lots of baseball today. We've got the football picks lunch money coming up in just a little bit. We here at 98.7 ESPN are thankful for the amazing men and women of the armed forces who have served our country and the incredible sacrifices they've made. We want to recognize your loved ones this Veterans Day. So send us an email at 98.7 FM at ESPN.com, including their name, where they're from, and the branch of the military they represent. Again, that's 98.7 FM at ESPN.com. We will shout out your loved one's name on air this Veterans Day. To the men and women who have served and are still serving, 98.7 ESPN says thank you for defending our freedom. All right, let us return to the phones at 800-919-3776. Our guy Matt in Peekskill has been very patient. Matt, what's going on, dude? Matt's gone. He's not that patient, so screw him. How about Patrick? He's in Queens. Patrick, are you rewarded for waiting?
I am. How about Chicken Parm Hero? You inspired me for lunch today.
In case you missed it.
Did you tell the audience... did you tell that story today on this show? You have to tell that story.
I did not. I will tweet the story out shortly. It was from last night.
Steven, you tell it better. You have to tell it on this audience so everybody can hear it. But first of all, I want to talk about the Francisco Lindor trade. How about Gary Sanchez straight up? They're not doing that. Our problem. They're getting rid of their problem. And they also have a guy they can build their future around.
They're not doing that. Gary, first of all, Gary Sanchez is a free agent, after 2023, 2022?
Yeah, he's got 3 years.
I don't think they're doing that. He's making $6 million. They want guys that they're going to have control over for 5 and 6 years to try to go make that deal, unless it's a player the level of Torres. I think it's going to take more.
No, they're not getting Torres. I won't get Florida.
No, of course not. I wouldn't do that either. Yeah. I would not trade for Lindor if I were the Yankees. I would re-sign LeMahieu because you can't have both. And LeMahieu is a known quantity for this team in every possible way. It's not a knock on what Lindor is. He's a top 10 player in the game.
I love LeMahieu, but I just think we need a left-hand hitter, and we need a shortstop. I would make that trade.
You know who fits that? Didi Gregorius.
Yeah, but then we.
Here's my problem, Patrick. Okay, you're going to hand away a top talent in a trade. You're going to pay him $21 million this year, and then you're going to hand him a 10-year, $300 million deal.
Well, if we that's why I want to push Sanchez, because we were eventually going to sign.
No, you're not. You're not signing Sanchez to any long-term deal right now.
That's what I wanted to package a center, make him the centerpiece of the deal to Cleveland, because he could go into like. Cuba,
Patrick, it's cute that you want to make him the centerpiece, and thanks for the call, but it's not happening. It's a cute little thought you have, Gary Sanchez. The volume or the value for Gary Sanchez right now is nowhere that you are dreaming it to be. Val is in the Bronx next, 98.7 ESPN. Val.
Good afternoon, Mr. Carlin. How are you?
It's the first time that we're talking.
I've called the show before, but I'm very, very pleased to speak to you. It's the first time I've ever had a chance to have a conversation on the phone with you, and I've been listening to everything between you and Kenny. You guys answered some questions I asked a couple of weeks ago, actually going back to the end of the World Series. Because personally, I think you are so much on point with that, on everything as far as LeMahieu, and more importantly, Didi Gregorius. Didi, I have a little bit of a stake in that because I was one of those people when Derek left, you know, not left, but retired. You know, there was this big question is what that hole in a shortstop was going to mean for us. And Didi came in and filled that spot and made that a non-conversation. More importantly, especially with the way that the game is changing now, I know our identity is the big bombers and we put things over the wall and all that, but you got to have one of those guys that can consistently do whatever needs to be done on the field. Didi is the kind of guy that, you know, when they shift, he can push a bunt to third base and just get on. You need a home run, he can give you one of those. And yeah,
listen,
you know,
Didi Gregorius can do a lot of different things, and thanks for the call. And he's 31 years old. He still has plenty of ability. He's not a Gold Glove shortstop, but he's a very good shortstop. He's certainly better than Gleyber Torres is. He's a left-handed bat, and he's been a leader on this team before. And again, not talking about 10 years. Not talking about 7 years. Not talking about 5 years. We're talking about two. If I were Didi Gregorius, and I'm looking at the landscape of what free agency could look like next year, and as bad as it could be right now, if the Yankees are willing to offer me a 2-year, $25 million deal, bingo, I'm in. Because the collective bargaining agreement's up after next season, lockout could happen, and you don't know what it's all going to look like. It could be a hard cap for all we know. If Tony Clark's negotiating it, it could be a hard cap and the players have to pay if it's above the hard cap. He is not exactly the skilled negotiator that some of the other guys have been. He's no Donald Fear, that's for sure. I got to mention this. I'm surprised, but I'm not. Alex Cora is back as the manager of the Boston Red Sox. John Heyman broke the news this morning. And frankly, bravo. Well done. Alex Cora is a great manager. You can scream all you want about how he cheated, okay? So did Bill Belichick numerous times. Alex Cora is somebody that this offseason or this season paid a penalty, was contrite for it, knows the mistakes that he's made, and is somebody that is incredibly still respected around the game. And you might be annoyed as a Yankee fan that Alex Cora is back, but you know the best reason? More juice to Yankees Red Sox. More juice to Yankees Red Sox. Alex Cora was a big part of the cheating, but that guy went out there, has pretty much owned up to it, probably took too much of the blame, and at the same time, paid his penalty, is brilliant, and you know what happens? People who are talented and brilliant get second chances. We've seen that lately, haven't we? That happens. I say Alex Cora coming back for the Red Sox is awesome. Awesome. I absolutely love it. I think it's perfect for them, and I think it's going to do nothing but add energy and juice to Yankees Red Sox. It's amazing.
Let's get a little extra money in your pocket.
Cheese and sour cream on the taco.
This is Lunch Money.
I love hearing Bart say cheese on the taco because I know what he is talking about. That's right. Carlin in for Bart and Hahn. Lunch Money time. NFL picks. First of all, since I am in for the boys, I will give you their picks. They are going to hold off until their jet pick until Monday night with the Patriots. Alan Hahn has taken the New York Giants +2.5 against the Washington football team. New York Giants +2.5 against the Washington football team. Alan Hahn. I can't do the Bart Hahn thing. I can't do it.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's true too. Has taken the Carolina Panthers +10.5 in Kansas City. Excuse me for a second. Oh, let me repeat that. Allen has taken the Carolina Panthers +10.5 in Kansas City. Sucker. Bart Scott. Pittsburgh Steelers -14.
You want pancakes?
I do, always. And with the money I'm going to win on this, I'm going to get me a whole stack. Over the Dallas Cowboys. Pittsburgh -14 over Dallas. And Bart Scott is taking the Washington football team -2.5.
I don't call you Chris Hansen. I call you Chris Hansen.
Over the New York Giants. Washington football team -2.5 over the New York Giants. Okay, my picks. Listen, normally I do this because I have been so atrocious at picking games over the last several years that I pick the most obscure fact about a particular city, and whatever humors me the most, that's what I go with. But this week, being that I'm filling in, let's make it happen, Captain. I am 8-7 on the season. A couple of weeks there I was out, I missed, you know, schedules all over the map, didn't get to make the picks. And I'm not going to try to tell you that I had all winners when I didn't. Number one, the New York Giants. I will take the New York Giants +2.5 against the Washington football team. The Giants getting 2.5 against the Washington football team, I mean, that's insulting. And I know the Giants are bad, but they're primarily bad because of the quarterback. I think this is a week that Daniel Jones actually has a pretty good game against Washington. Give me the Giants +2.5. Give me, because I don't trust Belichick to save anyone's lives. Give me the New York Jets +7.5 against the New England Patriots. What? That's right. Give me the New York Jets +7.5 against the New England Patriots. Why? Why? Why would you do that when you have a team in the Jets that have lost by an average of 18 points every game? Simply because I think Belichick is going to do his damnedest to keep Trevor Lawrence away from the New York Jets and have to face him twice a year in the division. And finally, I go in direct opposition with Alan Hahn, and I will take the Kansas City Chiefs -10.5 over the Carolina Panthers.
Falling from 6-8, so that's just a kick in the crotch.
Yeah, it's going to be a kick in your crotch, Cowboy. 10.5 Chiefs over those Carolina Panthers. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Let us roll on the phones the rest of the way. It is Greg in Manalapan who is next on 98.7 ESPN. Greg.
Hey, Chris, I normally call in to Michael Kay, but you were talking about it, and I got to get this off my chest because I've heard it before. Any talk about not re-signing Lemieux is lunacy. He is the best player down the pinstripes since the captain did. Hands down. It's not even debatable at this point. I don't mind getting Lindor. I mean, that would be great. But then, guess what? Put Glaber in left field. The kid does have talent, but he's young enough to learn how to play it. And
I'm
that
not
way
putting
you can
Glaber
keep
in left field. Glaber at second base is where he needs to be.
But I also want to keep Luke because he was the MVP. They wouldn't even have made the playoffs this year if it wasn't for him. Keep that side of the infield as it is. That's Lemieux's natural position, and Glaber's young. Let him lose. If you want to
Here's the thing about LeMahieu. He can be natural at three different positions, and thanks for the call, Greg. LeMahieu can play first, second, or third. So I don't have to worry about that. Voit is a guy that makes no money at 29 years old and just had what I think is his absolute peak. If ever there was a case to sell high on a guy, this is it. This is it. This portion of Bart and Hahn on 98.7 ESPN brought to you by the New Jersey Lottery. Big money on the line with Mega Millions and Powerball, both jackpots over $140 million. You could become New Jersey's next multimillionaire. After all, anything can happen in New Jersey. Dan and Morris Plains. Dan, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Dan, are you going to enjoy a little Friday lunch over at Collins? Grab a burger?
Yeah, right down the street from me.
I love Collins. That is a tremendous place in Morris Plains.
Yeah, right next to Arthur's. Yep.
Yes, sir. Both solid.
Yep. So listen, you know, a lot of talk about Lawrence to the Jets. No talk about Justin Fields to the Giants, who currently drafts second. Your thoughts on that? I really just think Daniel Jones, they should never passed on Allen, and he's nothing more than Jacoby Brissett talent-wise, my opinion.
I can't say he's Jacoby Brissett, okay? I think that might be a little bit selling him short, but if the Giants are at the number two pick, they are there for a reason, and that reason is that Daniel Jones played poorly, or he got hurt, but more likely, he played poorly. And you'd have to look long and hard at Justin Fields. Thanks for the call, Dan. I get to see Fields in person tomorrow night. I'm excited to see that. I'm excited to see how he has improved his game. But more than anything else, Jones has got an incredibly big eight games for the New York Giants because, folks, as much as you want to let guys develop, it's just not there anymore, especially with as quickly as we cycle through GMs these days. Bruce in Maryland next, 98.7 ESPN. Bruce, you're on Bart and Hahn.
Yeah, hi, Chris. By the way, you're my favorite guy in ESPN. I really enjoy listening to you.
I could see that.
Yep.
Sure.
Do you mind if I make a quick shout-out to my friend who is who's currently suffering from COVID?
Absolutely.
Steven, we wish you the best and wish you a quick and very well recovery.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And
good job,
Steve. Point about the Jets.
Go ahead.
I feel like no one rips up on Joe Douglas. Adam Gase is a complete fraud. That we already know. But Joe Douglas, look what he did in this draft. No one goes through this. He's drafting random people late in the draft. There was a big wide receiver draft. Besides the fact that Sam Darnold had no position players, he did not re-sign Robbie Anderson. And I feel like if he would have re-signed Robbie, drafted a few more
wide
receivers.
And he said the other day that was a mistake, Bruce, and thanks for the call. The problem is you can't undo that one. And the offensive line, they tried to get Jack Conklin. They couldn't. He went to Cleveland, so they didn't want to pay another tackle big-time money. I don't blame them. That quality of tackle wasn't out there.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.